ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Flooding in Central Australia. The recovery begins.
We've got such a long history of flood data since we were here in the 1940s, and it just is an unprecedented, unbelievable weather event. That volume of water, it had to go somewhere, and the houses bore the brunt of it.
Hello, this is Australia Wide. My name's Lisa Herbert. A ring-in for a couple of days. Mammalian meat allergy. For the first time in Australia, it's been ruled the cause of death of a young lad who'd just been enjoying sausages sitting around a campfire with his mates. And for some parents, simple tasks like going out to dinner or visiting the hairdresser can be really challenging. Now one country mum has come up with a creative solution for her neurodivergent son.
Did it feel like a big hug when you wore it?
It feels like a bear.
Does it feel like you're being cuddled?
Yes, by mummy and daddy and sissy.
That's coming up on Australia Wide. Let's start the program in the Victorian Alps. For patients in Australia's most remote corners, a video call is often their only bridge to mental health support. However, Medicare regulations now require an in-person GP visit every year to maintain telehealth eligibility. Olivia Clayton, a Victorian-based clinical psychologist, says this is creating a significant barrier for some of her clients. Her online practice was designed specifically to fill the gap for rural Australians. She's told reporter Philippe Perez many of those now face the stressful reality of travelling long distances to keep their digital sessions with herself and her mental health GP colleagues.
This has been a disturbing disruption to patient care. So we have many patients who have been consulting with our GPs via video for several years for their mental health care and who now must be informed that they need to establish care with a different GP in person. And this disruption is distressing for patients who have built a strong, trusting, therapeutic relationship with their GPs. It's particularly difficult given that our GPs work closely within the same team as their psychologist, providing a level of coordinated, high-quality care.
Since November last year, Medicare reinstated the requirement that a patient must have seen their GP in person at least once in the last 12 months to access GP telehealth mental health items. Olivia Clayton is asking that the exemption, though, be retained.
In rural communities especially, people often wait until things are quite serious before seeking help. If we can reduce barriers at the entry point, like access to a GP mental health treatment plan, we're more likely to support people earlier in the course of illness, and that can prevent avoidable deterioration and reduce pressure on already stretched crisis services.
Dr. Laura Carter is a mental health trained GP based in Mansfield. She consults in person but also via telehealth with patients nationwide, including some whose nearest GP is hundreds of kilometres away. She said the changes disadvantage people in rural and remote areas, especially when they have to travel long distances just to see a GP face to face.
We know with telehealth and video consultations that we can establish a really good rapport that is authentic and a real connection with people. And that develops over time, so that continuity can still be provided whether or not you're face-to-face or not. And I can personally, you know, testify that I do see patients not in my rural town, but in other rural towns within the state, but also from other states as well, where they can be very remote and not actually have a GP available for 600 kilometres or something like that. So it is quite impactful to be able to say, well, now they need to see someone face-to-face within 12 months.
The ABC has spoken to a mental health patient living in regional Victoria who's asked to remain anonymous due to privacy reasons. They've had to attend several telehealth sessions for depression and burnout over the last few years due to their high-demanding job as a country vet. They told us that
when someone's feeling really vulnerable or if they're quite antisocial, The last thing they really want to do is go into a GP office or reception where there's other people in town that they probably don't want to see.
A federal government spokesperson said $8 million in the health, disability and ageing portfolio was being invested to expand free mental health care and would establish more places for accessibility. The spokesperson also said the changes in November align the preparation of mental health treatment plan telehealth items with face-to-face services to support continuity of care, enhance access equity and better integrate mental and physical health services. However, the executive director of the Australian Association of Psychologists, Tegan Carrison, says the GP exemption needs to be reinstated and that there should be better recognition of telehealth relationships which can better serve regional and remote communities.
It's really well established that most psychologists work near or in major cities. So the geographical imbalance means people in places in rural Australia really have so many fewer local psychologists per capita than our city residents have. So access to things like telehealth for referrals from GPs is absolutely an essential part of meeting community mental health need.
Olivia Clayton, whose practice is in Mansfield in the Victorian Alps there. Now let's make sure the winch is working and head out to the middle of Australia. A tropical low continues to hang around after delivering huge rainfalls across the Simpson and the Barkly districts, with several cattle stations reporting more than 500 millimetres of rain. Barkly Regional Council in the NT estimates 85% of its roads in the region have been impacted by flooding. One of the cattle stations hardest hit during this flood event has been Elkedra Station, about 400 kilometres north of Alice Springs. It's received more than 600 millimetres. Amber Driver from Elkedra has returned home and told reporter Charles Geary about the long road to recovery.
The river is still in flooding. For us, that's every summer we welcome the floodwaters, and that's a beautiful sight for many pastoralists seeing the water. But certainly on the ground, just seeing what was unfolding with the major devastation through the homesteads and complex, it was confronting. Probably wasn't prepared for the level of damage that was waiting for us, and really, to be completely honest, I avoided the homestead for a couple of hours. When I got home, we were just concentrating our efforts on getting one building safe and cleaned. We're having a challenge with power. Everything was submerged. We've lost power lines. We've lost plumbing and septic. So we spent a fair bit of an effort in our sort of commercial kitchen, just trying to clean that out. And to be honest, when I ventured to the homestead, it was pretty emotional.
You've shared some of the images with me, and that water level, by the looks of it, got really, really high up. I could only imagine, how difficult that would have been to see that.
Yeah, it's tough. You never can really prepare for that level of destruction. It's a life of memories and belongings. If they weren't washed down the river, they're sort of upside down in the house. It all just happened in such a hurry. There just was really no warning. And we've got such a long history of flood data since where we're here in the 1940s. And it just is an unprecedented, unbelievable weather event. That volume of water, it had to go somewhere, and the houses bore the brunt of it.
I've seen the image of your access road into Elkedra, and it's better described almost as a river right now. It's got a flow going through it completely by the looks of it.
Yeah, that's our access, and it's a public gazetted access road. It's about 85 kilometres, and vast sections of that road is gone. It's been a long, challenging conversation. The arterial road network in the Northern Territory, so we're certainly not alone in that regard either. But we've really seen firsthand the effects of decades of neglect and not servicing and fixing these roads to spec on a yearly basis. We're really just seeing the effects of that firsthand. The Northern Territory Roads Department are going to have a massive job at hand just to allow services to access our place. Yeah, there's a massive amount of work that needs to be done, and we need fencing supplies, we need tanks, we need building supplies, we need food, like everything.
It sounds like Elkedra and other stations are in need of support right now. What support do you hope comes from the Northern Territory and the federal government in this time?
My long-term wish is that political agendas are set aside. We need infrastructure rebuilt for communities like the Doppler radar in Tennant Creek. We need the arterial road system in the Northern Territory actually graded to spec on a yearly basis. I'm not sort of beating a drum for us specifically. I just, there's so much about remote life that includes the whole community. It's tourism, it's Indigenous communities, it's pastoralists, it's service provided, police, nurses, everybody that's working out here. We're working to a common goal, and we want to be safe as possible doing that.
There's Amber Driver from Elkedra Station, ending that report by Alice Springs-based Charles Geary.
You're listening to Australia Wide. On ABC Radio.
Let's go to the central coast of New South Wales now, where an Australian medical first has been linked to a rare tick-borne red meat allergy. On a camping trip back in June 2022, 16-year-old Jeremy Webb had some beef sausages around the campfire. He soon after began having difficulty breathing at the McMaster's Beach campground and sadly later died in hospital. ABC reporter Courtney Barrett-Peters has been following this case. Courtney, New South Wales State Deputy Coroner Carmel Forbes handed down her findings early this morning. What did she detail in the ruling?
Well, Lisa, the coronial inquest into Jeremy Webb's death has very quickly become a landmark test case for many in the Australian medical and allergist community. Now, the 16-year-old boy was initially thought to have died of asthma alone, but his parents spent years lobbying for the New South Wales Coroner's Court to hold an inquest into their son's death, believing that his rare allergy to red meat may have had a role in his death. Now, today, New South Wales Deputy State Coroner Carmel Forbes ruled that he died of anaphylaxis triggered by mammalian meat allergy, which then led to a severe asthma attack. This, of course, makes him the first confirmed case to have died of the tick-induced red meat allergy in Australia, and experts believe that he's only the second in the world.
Goodness, it's a very sad story. What has Jeremy's family had to say after these findings were revealed, and obviously after they have been campaigning for some sort of attention to this?
Lisa, his family has been extremely strong throughout this. I've had a very close relationship with them over the past few months. They say that a lot of their bravery has come from keeping Jeremy's legacy alive. They say that he was a very proud and strong, independent young man. They say today that they're elated to hear this from the New South Wales Deputy State Coroner Carmel Forbes. It also helps to provide them with some more answers as to how their son died.
This is now going to go into the records, the database, which will pick up, allow more haters like this that he picked up, which is exactly what we wanted. During his life, Jeremy made a positive impact on the lives of his friends, family, and also strangers. And now, thanks to every individual involved in this inquest, Jeremy continues to make a positive impact, saving lives into the future. Yeah, he made a difference when he was alive, and now he's still continuing to make a difference when he's passed.
Did the coroner make any recommendations after these findings?
She actually did make a few recommendations. I wasn't expecting her to hand down many in her findings today. However, one of her recommendations that she made was that the Central Coast Local Health District increase their education around mammalian meat allergy, particularly considering the prevalence of ticks up and down the east coast of Australia. Now, Australian paralysis ticks mainly range from about Cairns at the top of the country right down to the Victorian border as well. She says that mammalian meat allergy or Alpha-Gal syndrome presents very differently in severe allergic reactions. Quite often the onset of allergies there are delayed in about 2 to 10 hours as opposed to being immediate reactions with, say, other food allergies as well.
And what about consumers? You know, what has the red meat industry said about this? And what should consumers do who like a bit of steak and also live, you know, in these tick areas?
Look, we haven't heard from the red meat industry yet. However, for the vast majority of people who do actually develop Alpha-Gal syndrome, about 85% of people who are diagnosed with that allergy, they actually won't have physical symptoms of the allergy at all, really, which is why it does make it a little bit scarier. However, if we're looking more at allergy activists and education programs for the red meat allergy, they're calling for people to monitor their tick bites. So if you're out and about, just be tick safe. Wear long sleeves, long pants, tuck your socks into your pants, just to make sure that you can eliminate as much risk of being bitten by a tick in the first place. Because as we know, a prevention is always better than a cure. However, if you are bitten by a tick, allergists are recommending that you try and kill the tick on the body and you don't try and flick it off, just in case the tick is able to release that Alpha-Gal molecule, which is a sugar protein that ticks can pick off, say, animals like cows or pigs and things like that, and that's how you do get the allergy in the first place. So yeah, like I said, prevention is always better than a cure.
And is it just the paralysis tick or all ticks are we talking?
Look, the majority of the research that we've received at this stage is to suggest that it's mainly the Australian paralysis tick. However, there have been some studies in the US that suggest the Lone Star tick may also be capable of transferring this allergy. However, with only 2 confirmed deaths in the world, studies around this allergy is still very much emerging. I think it was only in 2007 that Professor Cheryl Van Noonan actually created a link between the allergy itself and ticks inducing it in the first place. So it still is very, very fresh.
And the other issue that Professor Van Noonan pointed out to the ABC is that it's actually very hard, if you've been bitten by ticks in the past, to figure out if you've actually got this allergy.
The diagnosis relies on the history from the patient and then a confirmatory blood test. So one of the difficulties with diagnosis is that the test itself is not enough. We have to have the clinical history that fits with it. So positive test for any allergy is a question and not an answer. And the question is this allergy important to this person at this time in their life? And does it explain the symptoms from which the patient's complaining? So they have to satisfy those criteria, because in actual fact, of the people who are sensitized to the mammalian meat allergen, only 15 to 20% of people will exhibit symptoms of clinical, or i.e. have symptoms of mammalian meat allergy.
It's quite extraordinary, mammalian meat allergy. Courtney, thank you very much for your time for Australia Wide today.
Thank you.
Reporter Courtney Barrett-Peters.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
He didn't want to go to school, he didn't want to leave my side.
Yeah, a lot of family violence in homes when I was growing up.
You know, you take out insurance hoping that it never happens, but if it does, you want them to have your back.
On ABC Radio.
Now, taking kids to the hairdressers can actually be quite the adventure for many, and not necessarily fun. In Deniliquin, near the New South Wales-Victoria border, mum Lucy Horn used to dread taking her autistic son for a haircut. But she's come up with a creative solution, helping him to not be so overwhelmed by the experience. She's designed a portable big hug suit that could be the answer parents of children who are neurodiverse have been looking for. Andrew Mangelsdorf has this story.
For most people, going to the hairdresser is no big deal. But for Lucy Horn's son Jake, diagnosed with autism and ADHD when he was 4 years old, A simple haircut in their hometown of Deniliquin, New South Wales, could be an overwhelming exercise.
Walking into a salon, you're overwhelmed with the stark, bright lights, the smells and the vibration of the razor and so much talking, because hairdressers, they love to chat, which is fantastic. But sometimes it's just a concoction of overload.
These kind of struggles inspired the former special ed teacher and now speech pathologist to hand make a sensory cape for Jake to help keep him calm. She made hidden pockets with little sensory toys or regulation tools attached.
I just need his little hands to be busy and active and engaged. So when he was at the hairdresser's, he wasn't reaching up, putting his fingers near the razor, and he wasn't coping. So I thought, well, if we have this cape, which has evenly distributed weight across it, to feel like a big embrace, because he's nearly getting too big to be sitting on my knee and for me to be restraining his arms because they're constantly up. And so the hairdresser wasn't able to get access for the haircut.
It worked.
He will just, instead of his head buried down and not being able to cut the front of his hair, now he'd actually look up and be fiddling and engaging in some conversation with the hairdresser, that was a first.
Lucy soon found the cape was actually good for Jake in other overwhelming situations too.
Especially meal times, whether you're in a hurry in the morning to get out the door or you're exhausted, got home from preschool, got home from school, and things are messy, things are chaos because you're trying to get dinner and then we're trying to get into bath. And so it was just taking all that away.
Several years down the track, and Lucy's trialled a new version of that original suit at hairdressers around town. It's known as the Big Hug suit, and she's now hoping to put it into production.
This is just an option for people before they're getting dysregulated. It's a tool to have in your toolbox. Because I was hearing other parents who were going down very similar roads, facing these challenges. These are daily challenges. So being able to get your hair brushed, being able to turn up into society that you looked well cared and loved, and being able to get out the door for school without being that overwhelmed and distraught, pretty much, this cape can actually help those sensory seekers, those sensory avoiders. It's for parents also to think that when they're in crisis mode and they're down in the trenches, to know that there is options. Hey, we could try this.
Monash University clinical psychologist Nicole Reinhardt says there's a growing body of research into how technology and assistance tools help reduce the sensory overload experienced by children with autism.
Some children find some of those interventions and devices very useful, and that's great, but not for all children. And so this is where our research programs are pointing us to. It's not and never going to be a case of one shoe fits all. We have to have very bespoke approaches for each child and their needs.
Deniliquin mum Brittany Berry often finds it hard to control her son Charlie and said the cape has worked wonders on him at the hairdresser.
Well, he was instantly amused by the fidgets and sort of distracted from what was actually going on, so.
Did it feel like a big hug when you wore it?
It feels like a bear.
Does it feel like you're being cuddled?
Yes, by mummy and daddy and sissy.
Now Lucy Horn hopes the big hug suit she first made to help her son cope ends up helping more people too.
Originally, it was for children who were neurodiverse, but we've noticed during our trials that it's appealing to a wider variety. So it's adults, typical adults, males in particular. They were like, oh, I just like fiddling. It's fantastic. If I had a choice, I would definitely choose that one. It's giving me a little bit of feedback. I can relax, it's calm. We've also had heaps of interest from some dentists. So in those different situations, but definitely for the children who might have a developmental delay or be just on the go, but we want them to be able to participate. We also want them to be able to enjoy going to certain places or enjoy eating out at a restaurant. That's a far cry for some families. Isolation is real because it's too hard. It's too hard to go to the local RSL. Whereas if we can give this option and give people that chance to go as a family to these situations, I think that would just be a fantastic outcome.
That was Lucy Horn chatting with Andrew Mangelsdorf. And that's Australia Wide for today. Thank you very much for your company. Remember, you can podcast the show or listen back to the program through the ABC Listen app or by visiting the Australia Wide website. Just search for ABC Australia Wide. My name's Lisa Herbert. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Bye.
ABC Listen.